court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Court appointed. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, this topic is a first.
A first?
Yeah, it was suggested by a listener, and it was suggested in person to me at the courthouse.
You mean we actually have a listener that saw one of us in person?
That's right. I ran into Blair Gardner at the courthouse last week, and she suggested that we should do a topic on paternity.
Does that blow you away when somebody comes up and says they're a listener?
Yeah, I was a little shocked.
There's a guy that I've been friends with for several years, and I was somewhere where he was a few weeks ago, and I was saying something about, well, there's this podcast that me and my brother-in-law do, and he goes, yeah, I know, I listen to it.
That's awesome.
I said, you do? Court appointed? He goes, yeah, I haven't missed one yet. And I said, oh, that's cool. I don't ever think of anybody around here listening.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny because I always think of people like not in Huntington, but some people
like
do.
Putin. Some of them.
Putin over in Russia.
Yeah. Listen to it.
When he's not interfering with our election.
Yeah. We got a lot of people in California and Texas, as we said, listening.
Well, do you know what paternity is?
Sure, I know what paternity is. That's the baby daddy.
That's right. The baby daddy. So the legal definition of paternity.
I learned everything I know about baby daddy from Maury Povich and Jerry Springer and all that. When they do the paternity tests on there to prove if they are or not. And the guy either. I always, you know, here's the poor kid there. And they come in and they say, well, you're not the dad. The guy jumps up down. Yes. All right. It's like that kid's got to be watching say, oh, thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Unbridled joy.
Yeah. It's not mine.
And they always pan over to the woman sitting in the chair and just kind of like, huh, well, you know.
Well, I knew it, but you just had more money than the real guy.
Yeah. So the legal definition of paternity is the legal establishment of the identity of a child's father. Generally, this occurs after DNA testing as it takes place, or sometimes it can be admitted. Paternity is usually established in cases regarding child support, custody of children, adoption, or possibly inheritance. The way that paternity is generally established for most children that are born in the United States is if the father's name is on the birth certificate, that establishes paternity right there. So when there's not a father's name on the birth certificate, that's where you run into issues, legal issues, trying to establish paternity and figure out who the father is.
All right, let me ask you the first question that would come to my mind as being just a dude. How does the father's name end up on the birth certificate? Does he put it there or does the birth mother put it there?
Well, I think the birth mother can put the name on there, but I think he has to sign it.
I was going to say, could she just put down any name she wanted and he not know about it? Or does he have to acknowledge that he is?
I believe that they fill out the paperwork and then he acknowledges it by signing it when putting his John Hancock on the paper.
His John Hand was where?
On the paper.
Oh, okay. Well, but what if he doesn't sign it?
Well, I guess if he doesn't.
Is paternity up in the air?
Yeah, it could be.
So, in other words, she can claim who she wants, but unless he signs it, that's not an absolute.
Exactly.
It's a maybe.
It's a maybe. And it might need to be established. But now there is a presumption in law, and that is the presumption that if a man and woman are married, there's a rebuttal presumption that the husband is the father of the child.
Well, that's pretty clear cut. I can understand that if they're married. The problem comes into when they're not married.
Yeah, that's where he gets more issues. That presumption, though, it's based off of what's called Lord Mansfield's rule.
And Lord Mansfield?
Yes, he was.
He was a jolly good chap. I loved Lord Mansfield, not in a manly sort of way.
in a friendly way, not a manly way where we take wintry walks in the morning. He was an English jurist. So Lord Mansfield's rule, he basically said that the law of England is clear, that by the declaration of a father and a mother cannot be admitted to bastardize the issue born after marriage. So essentially saying you can't take away the legitimacy of a child born of marriage, and that's the presumption, the husband and wife presumption. And that's pretty much and that was from the Goodnight v. Moss case in 1777.
I'll bet when he said it, it sounded more elegant than that, though.
Probably.
Because he probably said it with an English accent, and that makes you sound smarter and more eloquent when you say it with an English accent.
The law of England is clear, that the declarations of a father and mother cannot be admitted to bastardize the issue born after marriage.
Oh, well, that was better. You'll have to work on your English accent, yeah. Although it is better than your Australian accent.
That was actually my Australian accent, too.
That's why it's better than your Australian accent.
So the basic of common law coming from England, that there's a rebuttal presumption that the child may not be the issue of, or may not be the issue of the father, but it's pretty much established that it is.
So in just plain English, that if you're married to somebody and they have a baby, it's yours unless you can prove otherwise.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a case, Luter by Epps v. Thompson from 1984.
Luter by Epps.
Luter, L-E-W-T-E-R, Luter.
Luter.
And
Luterhosen.
I just like this quote.
Is he a Swedish guy? Luterhosen.
Luterhosen. The quote was kind of succinct, and I really like it. It said, "The presumption that a child born in wedlock is legitimate, although rebuttable, is one of the strongest known in law."
The presumption that a child born in wedlock is legitimate is rebuttable, but... what are the presumptions of law?
Well, that was actually in 1984 and in the United States. You'd have to use an appropriate 1984 U.S. accent.
Oh, well, with a name like Luter?
I guess.
That's where we get the Swedish accent from, but we screwed up the Swedish and Switzerland thing last time.
Yeah, we got called out on that.
They were correct. Switzerland is the neutral country, not Sweden. Sweden is the home to all the beautiful blondes.
That's right. The Swedish bikini team.
There you go.
They used to have was it Bud Light? Was there?
Something like that. Yeah, had the Swedish. I think it was Swedish bikini. We might have that wrong. We'll get corrected on that.
That's right. No.
That's all right. We don't mind. We know we make mistakes. We're not perfect.
Not a robot. Or no. Am I?
We don't let robots in.
No robots allowed.
No robots.
So assuming the father's name is not on the birth certificate, typically what happens is an action is brought by a certain person in the court to establish paternity. In West Virginia, that would be under code 4824101, and it lists different people who can bring a paternity action to determine who the father of a child is.
And who might that be?
Well, under subsection E, it says a paternity proceeding may be brought by any of the following persons: an unmarried woman with physical or legal custody of a child whom she gave birth, a married woman with physical or legal custody of a child whom she gave birth, if the complaint alleges that the married woman lives separate and apart from her husband preceding the birth of the child, the married woman did not cohabit with her husband any time during such separation, and that such separation has continued without interruption, and the respondent, rather than the husband, is the father of the child. So that's the one that kind of keys off that presumption we were talking about whether or not
if you're married, that it's your kid.
Yep. The state of West Virginia.
Yes, we were married, but we hadn't seen each other for a year. So, right.
Yeah, it was one of those babies that was born while the husband was off fighting a war.
How exactly did that happen again? Well, you see, there was a ricochet involved.
It's a miracle.
Hallelujah! Praise Jesus.
The state of West Virginia can bring a paternity suit, including the Bureau for Child Support Enforcement, so they can establish who's going to have to be responsible for child support. Any person who is not the mother of the child, but who has physical or legal custody of the child. So if there's a guardian who's looking to maybe, and the policy reasons, there's probably a guardian who's looking to get child support payments from somebody to help take care of the child. The guardian or committee of the child. The next friend of the child when the child is a minor, by the child in his own or her own right, at any time after the child's 18th birthday, but prior to the child's 21st birthday. Or number eight, a man who believes he is the father of a child born out of wedlock when there has been no prior judicial determination of paternity. So those are the, in West Virginia, those are the people who can bring these lawsuits.
And I see.
Yeah, what they do is they file some sort of petition in the court and allege whatever they allege, depending on one of those eight circumstances or how they think the person is the father or who might be. And they'll name the person, generally, if they're not certain who it is, they'll name the father, potential father, the putative father. And putative father basically means a man whose legal relationship to the child has not yet been established, but who has alleged to be, or at least claims that he may be, the biological father of a child who was born to a woman to whom he is not married at the time of birth. And so when you see a complaint and it says, so in the interest of so-and-so, and one of the respondents is somebody's name and says putative father, that means there's some sort of question about whether or not that person might be the biological father of that child.
So the putative means that he may not actually be the father. It's just a question of it.
Exactly. And there can be cases where...
Would that be in a case where the woman put that on a birth certificate and the man never signed it? So he's a putative father?
It could be. He could maybe say, you know...
Would that be applying the term correctly, yeah, counselor?
It would be.
Well, there you go.
It could be saying, he could maybe say that, well, you put my name on the birth certificate, but I know you were sleeping with other people too, so I'm not going to sign it. So in that case, she would probably file a paternity lawsuit and name several putative fathers, assuming that there were multiple suitors or potential fathers. So you have a whole list of dudes and trying to figure out who the dude is. So who gets the lottery ticket, the winning lottery ticket?
Who's the dude with the little dude baby?
Right. And a lot of times the court will just order DNA testing in those instances.
Here's what I wonder. What the hell did we do before we had DNA testing?
Well,
I mean, you could do a blood test, and you could eliminate somebody if they had a different blood type, I guess.
Well, back in the day, they would actually take the baby and hold it up next to the man. I'm not even joking. They would just
kidding me?
No, they'd eyeball it.
Was that the eyeball test?
Yeah, they'd eyeball it.
You're kidding me?
No.
Yep, kid looks just like him.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible. I mean, there's a lot of times, like, I'll see a picture of Charlie, and I'll say, boy, that's a Justin look. She looks just like Justin there. But then there's other times I look at it, and there's baby pictures of Sydney, and she looks identical. I have to look at the background to know whether it's Sydney or Charlie.
Yeah.
They look so much alike.
Yeah.
So I would say there's a lot of fallacy involved in the eyeball test.
Oh, I'm sure. But, I mean, if you don't have any kind of scientific way to do it, what else are you going to do other than, like, yep, looks like him?
I mean, other than if there's like two guys and they're different ethnicities, then you might have a ground to stand on an eyeball test.
That's true.
But if they're both the same ethnicity and you're going to try to make a decision, that's just,
I actually saw a case with involving different ethnicities, and the father was saying, yeah, that's my child, but I don't think it was. Everyone was like, just kind of looking very strangely, like, I don't think that's your biological child. And I mean, you know, if he's formed a bond with it and he wants it to be his child, that's one thing. But I think he was adamant that it was his biological child. And it was like, I don't think so.
There was, this is a true story. I read the news where a woman gave birth to twins. Mm-hmm. One was Caucasian and one was African-American.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Two separate fathers?
Yes. It happened apparently within close proximity to each other.
Wow, that's amazing.
And two eggs were fertilized. She gave birth to twins, and one was from each.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's only at the time, I think it was the only documented case. I don't know if it still is or not.
Well, these paternity cases are important. Number one, because if you have a child, there needs to be two parents who are on the hook basically for child support, so the child does not become a ward of the state, so all the taxpayers don't have to carry the burden of taking care of a child.
You know what I always thought of whenever I heard that term, ward of the state?
What's that?
Burt Ward.
Oh, from Robin?
Yeah.
That's what I think of,
Batman,
too.
Ward of the state. That's what I think. Well, every time I hear that, I think, Robin. Robin was a ward of the state. That's where he got the name, Burt Ward. And always, Batman took him in and took care of him.
I always think that, too. And he was Bruce Wayne's ward.
Yeah, that's what I always think. Every time I hear ward of the state, I think Burt Ward.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a comic book enthusiast. I'm not like, you know, these ones that follow all of it and all the stuff. But that's still, as a kid, that always is the first thing I thought.
Me, too. And that's funny because we're kind of slightly different generations, too, but still it's the same thing. Because Burt Ward, he was the actor that played Robin, right? Or was that his character's name?
No, I think it was the character's name.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure Burt Ward was the character. Just like Bruce Wayne was Batman, Burt Ward was Robin.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was the actor.
I don't think so.
Oh.
I mean, I could be wrong. I have been wrong. But I'm pretty sure Burt Ward was the character's name.
I guarantee somebody out there listening to this podcast is going to know the answer to that one for sure.
Yeah, I hope they confirm me.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, so a child does not become the ward of the state. It can be important to establish the medical history of the child if there's any kind of genetic type things that the child might need to know about. Or visitation rights. If there's a father that wants to have visitation with their child, it's important. So basically they can have visitation and try to be involved in that child's life, and that's how it's established.
Well, that's what you hear a lot about now when you have a child maybe that was raised by a single parent and didn't know who their birth father was. And later in life, as they're adults, they seek them out a lot of times because they want to know medical history, because maybe they're getting ready to start a family, and they want to know what are things that ran in the family, and so they seek them out for that purpose. But I guess, you know, you approach somebody that you think may be the father, and ask them to take a DNA test to know for sure.
Yeah.
We just finished the Gilmore Girls, and in that one, Luke was...
Are you spoilers?
Oh, well, I guess I... Well, but yeah, but now Gilmore Girls has been off the air for 7 years.
Are you talking about the old?
Yeah, the old one.
Okay.
In the old one. It's not the new 4-episode release by Netflix.
I don't want you to make anybody mad.
No, I was going to say, if you didn't watch it 7 years ago, the hell with you. We're going to tell you anyway. Is that he has a little girl show up, and her school science project was to determine who her father was, and her mother gave her 3 names. And she snuck a follicle of hair from the 3 different guys who it could have been, and had a DNA test run and determined that Luke was her father. So that was in a science test. And she didn't even get first place for that. You find your father and you're a runner up.
That doesn't make much sense.
No.
It was probably the volcano one, didn't it?
Probably.
The volcano always wins.
Volcano always wins.
Well, there's some kind of interesting things, especially in this day and age. As society is shifting a little bit, and also how technology's gotten a bit more intricate these days, that you get different kinds of strange situations with regards to these paternity issues and issues regarding sperm and eggs and things like that. So there's obviously places where there's sperm donors, where there's artificial insemination and things like that. And most states have laws that say if a doctor performs this artificial insemination and certain procedures are followed with like forms and things like that, that basically severs any kind of paternity that sperm donor might have for that child.
Like that movie with Vince Vaughn.
Which one's that?
It was called something like that.
Oh, was
paternity
it?
Or something.
I haven't seen
and
that.
He was like a prolific sperm donor all through college to get his way through college or whatever. And somehow the records became available, and like 350 kids or something come forward claiming him as their father from their sperm donor records. That's a few years back, but it was pretty funny anyway.
I think I've maybe seen part of that movie, or maybe I just heard the premise of it. So it was pretty funny. Well, there's this one case. If you have a doctor perform this artificial insemination, the downside is it's probably pretty expensive. And there's, you know, old-fashioned ways you could do it. So
yeah. The old-fashioned way, the way that worked forever until we came up with these new scientific ways.
So there was a lesbian couple that was in Kansas, and they took out a Craigslist ad in 2009, and they were seeking somebody to be a sperm donor. And there was this man, and he responded, and he brought over 3 cupfuls of sperm and said it was gratis to the women. And then the women proceeded to use the sperm to artificially inseminate one of the women. And they did it themselves. The guy was not there. He said he left. But he just came over, dropped off 3 cups of sperm, said, see you later.
And I think one of them took it and told the other one, now lay back, spread your legs, and say ah.
I think it was the turkey baster. But he signed some sort of paper saying, you know, I'm not the father and I'm just donating this or anything like that. So anyway, the lesbian couple ended up separating, and the one lady who had the child was trying to seek some sort of
support. Yeah.
And so they said, well, who's the father? And they said, well, it's so-and-so. It's like, well, no, she can't be, you know, it's gotta be who's the actual father. And so she came clean, said it was this guy. And the state of Kansas actually sued this guy for paternity to say that, hey, you should be you should be on the hook for child support for this child.
Well, that's wrong.
Well, it was in the courts and in the news for a while. And the judge eventually ruled that since the guy had signed a contract and donated the sperm, and there was enough evidence, and basically that the two women were actually the legal guardians for the child, and therefore they were the ones who were responsible for child support equally and whatnot. So he was kind of off the hook. But I think it was the Kansas Attorney General who said they were unhappy with the result and thought about appealing it and all this stuff. So,
well, what you hope in today's society, of course, you can get married. They don't have to just be partners. They can actually be married.
Right.
And that hopefully will solve some of that, because, as you know, we had a case here close to home. I'm not going to get any specifics or names or anything, but we had a case here close to home where it was very similar to that. Mm-hmm. And the birth mother died. And so because they weren't married, they gave custody to the sperm donor, which basically was what he was. He wasn't the child's father. He was it wasn't Craigslist, but it was some type of way that they got the sperm donor. And then when she died, the sperm donor came in and said, I want to take custody. And he did.
Yeah. It's one of those things that there's not enough protection under the law for couples that are like that. For
yeah, the sex. Partner had no rights.
Yeah.
Because they weren't married. And so the partner had no rights. The grandmother who had raised them to a certain point, she was very involved in their life. She had no rights.
Yeah. I've seen that before too with, same sex partners where, and one of them died and there was things under the will, maybe they didn't have a will and they were trying to inherit, and they had lived together for a long time. So they were basically husband and wife, wife and wife, husband, husband, whatever.
Well, and clear something up for me. One of the things that they said is she should have specified in her will who she wanted the children to go with. You can't leave children in your will, is what they said. They said that doesn't matter. You can specify that's your wishes, right, but that doesn't mean a judge is going to honor that. That's not legally binding.
No, it's not legally binding, but it is extremely persuasive to a judge. It would probably be rare for a judge to say, I disagree with your dying wishes. And
well, but I don't know if a will is exactly the proper document. There's probably some type of document of custody that you should have filed in on, especially if this lady had cancer and, I don't know, maybe she thought she was going to beat it. I'm not sure, or that wasn't necessary, that the law would have more common sense.
I've put it in Florida. I put it in wills, and I said basically that it was their wish that so-and-so become the guardian of their children. And that, if both the parents die, that they want somebody to be the guardian, and that basically a trust be set up with all the assets for that child. So,
and in most cases, they would probably go along with that. I mean, yeah. A lot of people, if you have kids and you travel together, you think of things like that and you leave information. This is who I would like to watch my children. That's on Modern Family the other night. There was a discussion about that. And, but the problem becomes if there's a disagreement, somebody else enters into and says, look, I know that that's what they said, but I'm a better parent. And here's why.
Well, I think more
then
so,
the judge has to weigh that.
More so it would be like why the person who they specified would be unfit. That would be probably a better argument as to why, like, well, that person.
But does somebody have to be unfit, or could it just be that someone could provide a better life for the child than the other? Or does it simply come down to biology? And if the biology overrides somebody's wishes of somebody else.
Yeah, it would depend on a case-by-case basis, I'm certain.
Or judge by judge.
Yeah.
Some judges may weigh more to biology than they do to what they think is better for the child or something.
A judge, at the end of the day, a judge can do whatever they want, but They may be appealed. Judges don't like to be overturned on appeal, so.
But I have no background in this. You probably know better than I would, but I would say a lot of times, because those are usually heard in family court, at least in West Virginia.
Well.
Isn't that most time in custody hearings that there's a family court that rules on these things?
Well, there are family courts, but the family court's jurisdiction actually derives from the circuit court. So the circuit court has jurisdiction over family court, but then there's a special rule which says that family courts can be set up and they can hear it. So there's kind of a dual jurisdiction there. So
I'm just thinking that most of the time, if the family court rules, a higher court would probably be less likely to overrule it, because that's why the family court is there.
Well, the family court actually, in West Virginia at least, the appeals go from the family court to the circuit court. So that it would be kind of the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could appeal it, but what I'm saying is I just think the court would be less likely to override these judges.
Just because they're a family court judge?
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's what they deal with.
Nah, that's probably not. That's not true.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
The family court judges, I'm not going to say they get overruled all the time, but oftentimes circuit court judges overrule what the family court judge does. So it doesn't happen here in Cabell County a lot because we have excellent family court judges.
You know, in that eyeball test that you were talking about, you know what comes to mind for me?
What's that?
There was, I wish I'd have looked this up. I didn't think about it till just now. And I want to say it was England. There was on the internet here a while back, unless it ended up being one of those fake stories, a pig that was born with a human face. And so they were saying that somebody from the farmers group had something to do with a pig, and that's where that pig derived from. Well, could you imagine being in court and they hold that pig up next to you? Look at him. He looks just like you.
That would be the worst thing in the world. It's so embarrassing.
Who does this pig look? They got three of you. You got a lineup. We're going to hold this pig up next to the three suspects and tell us who you think it looks like.
Despite the fact that that cannibals in Polynesia say their name for humans is long pig, I don't think that the species can interbreed like that.
I know it's not supposed to. I don't know. I didn't see the story. I was listening to it. They were talking about it on the radio channel that I listened to. And I have to look that up. I'll go look it up. That's tomorrow. Funny. That would definitely be a case for the eyeball test for a paternity. All right. Now, I've got one in the news right now that has not been resolved and involves some famous people. And we love to talk about famous people in disparaging ways. That's just the American way. That's, you know, that's why all those entertainment rags and everything make their money. You know, the ones that come out and have all the things about people having affairs and everything else and that are famous people. That's what we like to hear about, famous people doing bad things.
There's even TV shows now, aren't there?
Yeah, probably so. The Real Housewives, all those things.
Also, there's like one of those tabloid magazines has their
TMZ.
Yeah.
They have those things. All right. One of our favorite actresses, I know she's one of mine, and I'm sure she's one of yours, Sofia Vergara.
I think
I said that right.
Yeah. She's
Sofia great. Vergara. She was engaged to a businessman named Nick Loeb. I think that's right. L-O-E-B, Loeb. And together, they had some, she was a few years older than him, and they were considering, he'd never had any children, she'd had children, but it was important to him, he'd like to have his own. So because she was getting a little bit older, she decided to have some eggs taken. Now I didn't know this, I knew they could take the eggs and freeze them, and they could take the sperm and freeze it. I didn't know that they could actually connect them together, make an embryo, and then freeze the embryo.
Oh, wow.
So that's what they had, is they had four frozen embryos. All right, two of them, while they were still engaged, they obtained a surrogate and implanted, you know, two different surrogates with one of these eggs, and neither one of them took, so they didn't work. So there's still two embryos left. So these embryos are her egg and his sperm. So he feels, you know, it's not like one or the other. They split up. They're no longer together. As a matter of fact, she is remarried to Joe Montenegro or some strange name. I don't know what it is. He was in Magic Mike. He was one of the dancer guys. I'm sure the women all know who he is. I don't know. I don't watch those kind of movies. But so he wants possession of the embryos. She wants to destroy them. So he had to seek injunction against her from destroying the embryos.
Wow.
So in a way, that's a paternity thing.
Oh, yeah, kind of, yeah.
And they said there's no precedence for it.
Well, that's almost more like a property dispute, though, to a certain degree.
That's one of the things they said is, depending on your religious beliefs, like Catholics, which you may be aware of, believe that life begins at conception. Therefore, if it's an embryo, it's alive.
Right.
Whereas a lot of people believe that there's, you know, like, you know, people that are abortion advocates, that it's not till the third trimester.
Mm-hmm.
So, depending on what you believe, is that a person or is it property? If it hasn't become a person, then it is property.
Right. Like when the fetus becomes viable outside the womb. Or
exactly. Yeah. Yes.
That's a really interesting question. But I don't know. That's I think probably property law would dictate that regardless of whether what your religious or personal beliefs are. I think property law is what's what you'd have to look for. Almost kind of like the Posner v. Post case we talked about in one of our first episodes, with Lodowick when he was chasing the fox.
Yeah.
So it goes back to property.
Well, you know, they asked her, they said, well, so when you did this, you were planning on having children with him. And she said, yeah, we already got the refrigerator or the eggs in the refrigerator, you know? So, and it was just a question of when, you know, when they were going to have them. So, you know, they said that it's a gray area and they quoted another case. It was Central Missouri versus Danforth. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Well, I had to look it up. I didn't know what, and it didn't specify what that meant. But I thought it was interesting because it tells you a little bit of the way they're thinking. That was where, like, say that you're married to a woman,
mm-hmm.
and she becomes pregnant, and she decides she wants to have an abortion. She doesn't want to have the baby, and you're the father. She's carrying your baby, and this person went and said, no, I don't want her to have the abortion, and filed an injunction against her from having abortion. So the question is, does a husband have the rights to forbid a spouse from having a baby? Same way, if it's a minor, does a parent have the right to forbid a minor from having a baby when they're impregnated?
Yeah.
So that's what this case said. You don't have the right to be able to do that. Yeah. That the woman has the right to do what they want to do. They're the ones that are pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, I see how that can be somewhat similar, but I think I could probably distinguish that case by saying that that's different because the embryo or the fetus is inside the woman's body.
Yeah. And that's he tried to use that as his leverage to why they couldn't destroy him.
Yeah. I don't think that flies.
And that's what they said. No, that doesn't apply to that. Yeah. So that's all they've figured out what doesn't apply, but they haven't figured out what does apply. But right now, the two eggs are still being held frozen, and it's unresolved.
Frozen in time.
Frozen eggs, green eggs and ham. The thing that I thought was funny, too, you know how when you type in a search and it starts populating it for you as it goes based on what your search is?
Yeah, or what you put in before.
Well, yeah, and I didn't know how you spell her last name, Vergara, so I type in Sophia. I'm pretty sure about Sophia. And so I type in V, and I see Sophia V. Varga. It looks like it. So I click on it, and here came the news stories up. Well, I start going through to find the news story so I can get the right thing. And then I look, and the search that it populated was Sophia Viagra. It was not spelled the way it is on here. It was Sophia Viagra. And I understand she may serve that purpose for a lot of people that watch the Modern Family, but it was spelled wrong. But if you search Sophia Viagra, she comes up.
That's one of those Freudian slips for this.
Freudian slips for the internet.
Yeah. Google had a Freudian slip.
And while I was researching this for the show, one other interesting thing popped up that was another paternity case, and it involved Johnny Utah.
Johnny Utah.
The original, not the remake.
Ohio State.
Was he Ohio? He wasn't Ohio State, was he?
Yeah.
Was he?
Ohio State Buckeyes, number four. Oh. Something like that, yeah.
I don't remember that part. But Keanu Reeves said that there was a Canadian lady named Karen Sala that claimed that her four children, and these were adult children, by the time she made this claim, they were all 21 and above, said that he fathered her four children. Said, but they took a DNA test, and the result was that Reeves was not related to any of the four kids, but Sala claimed that Reeves uses hypnosis to change the results. The case was dismissed, and the woman was ordered to pay Reeves $15,000.
I bet he got every penny of that.
But she was asking for an Ontario judge dismissed the paternity suit, and she was asking for $3 million a month in spousal support and $150,000 a month in retroactive child support. Because remember, the kids were grown up by the time that she even approached it and said that he vehemently denied having met the woman, even though she lives 100 kilometers north of Toronto, which is, I guess, where he grew up. And said that Sala raised several issues with the DNA results, including the possibility of tampering or that Reeves used hypnosis to affect the results. I do know, she says, for a fact that he is a biological father. She represented this to the judge and adding that she had proof but could not show it to the court. She said she had known Reeves since she was four or five, as Reeves grew up down the street from her. She didn't connect him to the actor until much later because she always knew him by several different names, she said. I didn't know who Keanu Reeves was. To me, he was Marty Spencer. Now, I assume Marty Spencer must have been his given name.
I guess.
But I looked it up. His birth name is Keanu Charles Reeves. So, you know, I don't know what she was thinking, but she says that in her affidavit, Sala suggested Reeves uses hypnosis and disguises himself as different people, including her ex-husband, because she was married to somebody while these four children were born.
Well,
but she said that he had sex with her, that Reeves had sex with her before, during, and after the marriage.
I would bet that father, the husband's name is on the birth certificate, and that the grounds for the divorce were she's batshit crazy.
Yeah. Is that grounds for a divorce?
You might not plead that in your pleading, but it'd probably become pretty apparent pretty quick.
That reminds me of the joke about why Mickey Mouse divorced Minnie Mouse.
Why is that?
The judge looked at him and said, well, Mickey, you can't divorce her just because she's crazy. He said, I didn't say she was crazy. I said she was effing goofy.
Oh, that's a home run right there.
Or something.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over some different terms or things we talked about, and it's like a little pop quiz at the end of the show. It helps solidify our knowledge to our listeners and to ourselves.
That's right.
So, all right, the first term is paternity.
Paternity. It's if you're the father of the child. Paternity is being the father.
Exactly. The next term is rebuttable presumption.
Rebuttable presumption. That's the one under if you're married to somebody, that's a rebuttable presumption that you're the father when they have children.
Yep. And then there's Lord Mansfield's rule.
Lord Mansfield. Isn't he the one that said if you're married to him that you probably are the father of the children? I mix that up.
With a better accent.
Oh. If you're married to them, you're probably the father of the children. Blimey, I don't want to hear any more of that ruddy, bloody, whatever.
He looks like a bloody pig.
Which one looks more like the pig? Blimey.
And the last term is putative.
Putative. The putative father. That's when it's the you don't necessarily agree. It's up for debate. You're supposed to be the father, but you disagree with it.
Right. It's a term that's used during the.
I can't think of the words I want to say.
Talking's hard. It's the term of art that's used during the paternity proceeding when the legal relationship,
the presumptive father.
Yeah. When the legal relationship of that man to the child has yet to been established, but he may be the father.
The mother maybe claimed that he was, but he didn't sign the thing. And so,
or maybe he claims he is, but
So that's true. He could claim it. And she says, I don't want nothing to do with him.
Yeah. It could be either way. So
I want this rich feller that came along later.
Me too. So, well, that's going to do it for our paternity episode.
Well, good. We got through that. And
thanks to Blair Gardner for planting that seed.
Oh, that was a hand-derived seed. I don't know. Better leave that one alone. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.